I'm Dr. Nathaniel Chin, and you're listening to Dementia Matters, a podcast about Alzheimer's disease. Dementia Matters is a production of the Wisconsin Alzheimer's Disease Research Center. Our goal is to educate listeners on the latest news in Alzheimer's disease research and caregiver strategies. Thanks for joining us. Our guest today in Dementia Matters is former sports broadcaster and Alzheimer's disease advocate, Mr. Paul Brown. Mr. Brown had a 40-year career as the voice of the University of Wisconsin Badger men's hockey team. He has since retired from broadcasting, but these days, Paul lends his recognizable voice to the fight against Alzheimer's disease. Paul, thank you for joining us on Dementia Matters.
Thank you for inviting me. It's a pleasure to be here.
Paul, I understand your wife was diagnosed with early onset Alzheimer's disease at the age of 59, and for many years, you were her primary caregiver at home. What did you learn about this disease that most people don't know until it hits so close to home?
I learned a lot of things, but if I look at a couple of the highlights of the things that I learned, number one is the tremendous impact that it has on families in terms of emotionally, mentally, physically, financially. And really, when you go through the experience, the results, it can be catastrophic to families in terms of what it does to them and the impact that it has on that family. And the other thing is, when you don't realize how serious the problem of Alzheimer's is, and you start finding out the facts and the figures and those kind of things, and you think about the long-term ramifications of the disease, because right now, no prevention and no cure. And if you look at the possibility that more than 14 million people are going to have this disease by 2050, you start thinking about, is there going to be enough facilities to take care of those people? How about the people that work in those facilities? Are they going to be able to find them? Where are the caregivers going to come from? Because you need a real passion to be a caregiver and that kind of thing. You look at the financial implications of the disease and the costs. I mean, it's economic suicide if the numbers are really correct. So when you look at the disease as a whole, you think about the potential, and some of the experts will say that if they don't find the prevention or the cure, this could be one of the top two or maybe the top priority in the world in the future in terms of healthcare and the problems it's going to cause.
You know, Paul, I appreciate how you said that, in that even though this is a medical disease, it affects more than one person. It affects families, it affects communities, and it affects us not just our physical form, but as you just said, structurally, logistically, the buildings, the caregivers. This is something that's going to take a truly holistic approach in order to improve and ideally to prevent and cure.
And one of the things that I think about on a daily basis is I survived it. The journey is unbelievable, and I'm sure we'll go into that in a little bit. But it affects everybody. And when you talk to people about it, you can almost see the look of relief on their face. Boy, thank goodness I don't have anybody involved in my family that has this disease. And they're living their lives on a day-to-day basis. They have challenges and things that they have to take care of every day. But what realistically scares me is even for the people that don't directly have anybody involved, and I hope you never do, you're going to be impacted by it in the future. Because the question becomes, who's going to pay for all of this? How is this going to work? It's going to impact everybody, and that includes people that aren't involved.
It's going to impact our communities, but it will impact the caregiver. It will impact families. And so for you, from a caregiver's perspective, how did Alzheimer's disease change your relationship with your wife and your family?
Well, starting with Karen, number one is I was lucky to have her in my life. What attracted me to her in the very beginning was the smile. She was very friendly, outgoing, happy-go-lucky, always kidding people, giving them a bad time. She was a Pied Piper, kind of around kids, always willing to help others. She was very supportive and a very caring individual. And we laughed and we had a lot of good times together as we started our careers, and we were both, I think, fairly successful in our career. So we went from that lifestyle of enjoying our work, having a good time, laughing a lot, and so to speak, living the good life. And from there, I wound up visiting her in a memory care unit. What you would see was really heart-wrenching. I saw the changes and the deterioration that was happening to her. When I leave, I saw the panic, the confusion, and the fear. And one of the things in the latter part of her life that I truly missed on a day-to-day basis, I couldn't even have a normal conversation with this person anymore. She was disappearing. And she got to the point, as it does in many cases, where she didn't even recognize me. And that's a tough phase of the disease. I used to go every day and I'd sit with her. In the last couple of months she was alive, all she would say is Paul coming? Is Paul coming? Got asked that question repeatedly. And I'd sit there and I'd say, her nickname was KK, and I'd say, KK, I'm here. And she'd go, oh, okay, but is Paul coming? She'd ask the help if they could be Paul. So when you live through that, you know, the last couple of years of Karen's life, it wasn't my best friend, the person I fell in love with, my wife, the person that I married, all of that was gone. And the love of my life was gone. Karen was still there as a human being, but not anywhere close to the person that I had loved and had so many happy years with.
And you spent a great deal of time taking care of Karen in your own home. And so I guess I'm wondering, was there a turning point for you when you realized you needed more than just your own ability?
Oh, yeah, I can remember the situation very vividly. And it's different for different people. In some cases, it may be a small thing that happens, or it's a very large thing that happens. And you just, at that point, go, I can't do this anymore. And I tried to take care of Karen on my own for about 5.5 years. And doing that, and I also made a mistake, and I tried to do a lot of it on my own, which was a very serious mistake that I made. I should have accepted help from others and those kind of things. And one day I was sitting in a recliner, and Karen, we had full-length mirrors behind our dining room table. And all of a sudden, Karen was standing over looking in the full-length mirrors, and she started pounding with her fists on the glass. Get that blankety blank woman out of the house. And I went over to grab her and I put my arms around her from behind, and she turned and she pushed me away and she said, you're trying to hurt me, you're trying to hurt me. And that to me was the point where I go, I can't do this anymore.
And fast forward to after Karen passes away, and now you're a strong advocate for Alzheimer's disease awareness, for prevention, for cure, for research, for advocacy in essence. Was there a turning point where you found your voice as this advocate for the disease and you decided to redirect that energy, that experience, to building awareness of Alzheimer's disease for caregivers?
Well, I mentioned the one situation that where I had to break a promise which I had made to her that I would never put her in a memory care facility. And the day that I put her in that facility and made that decision and turned around and walked out of that facility and left her there, that was the toughest day of my life. And at that point, you start thinking about what you had witnessed and what you had gone through and what you had seen in other families as you watched them in the memory care unit and the impact that it has on their lives and those kind of things. And one other situation with Karen, which stands out in my mind today, Karen used to love to fish, absolutely loved it. In fact, it used to drive me crazy because all she wanted to fish with was a nightcrawler and a bobber. That's fine, but she'd cast the rod out in the reel. She wouldn't let the bobber sit on the water to indicate she had a bite. She'd reel it in. And about 6 months before she passed away, we tried to have it for her to have a nice day, we took her fishing. And it took about 5 minutes to realize that here's a person that would sit for hours and didn't care if she caught anything. She had no idea how to hold a rod, how to cast it, or how to reel it in. And when you see situations like that, you can't help but become an advocate for what is a devastating disease.
What do you want to accomplish as a voice for Alzheimer's disease? What is your message, and how do you reach your audience?
What I would like is for people just to pay attention and become aware of potentially how serious the situation is with Alzheimer's. For example, in Wisconsin, there's been approximately 112,000 people who have officially been diagnosed with the disease. You try to put that into perspective, you could take Miller Park in Milwaukee and Lambeau Field in Green Bay, and basically 9 out of the 10 people sitting in those stands would all have the disease. You take it to the national level or the international level, and if the projections are true that 14 to 15 million people are going to have it by 2050, you look at it and think about it, New York, Los Angeles, and Chicago, the top three cities in the United States, represents approximately 16 million people. Think about the fact that if in reality 15 million people have that disease, that basically means that 9 out of the 10 people that live in the top three cities of the United States could all have the disease. When you think about that, that's pretty devastating. And the cost, if it's true, that it's $1 trillion a year in costs by 2050. I don't know about you, but I have no idea what $1 trillion was. So I asked two individuals to tell me, without paying the interest, what is $1 trillion? And I didn't tell both of them that I was asking the other one. And they came back with very similar answers. And it's stunning. You and I could spend $10 million a day, every day, for over 250 years. That's $1 trillion, or the cost of the disease, every year. How does that work? It's economic suicide. It doesn't work. That's how important this is. And people need to understand that. This is a serious situation.
You've been able to attract a lot of attention to Alzheimer's disease here in Wisconsin, and beyond, really, with your involvement in the annual American Family Insurance Championship golf tournament. Tell us about this event and how you and your colleagues are raising awareness for Alzheimer's disease.
Well, it starts with a local talk show that we did here in Madison with Dennis Tiziani and myself. Dennis is the owner of Cherokee Country Club in Madison. His son-in-law is Steve Stricker. And about 5-6 years ago, we decided just to have an hour talk show during the summertime to talk about golf and use the proceeds to help out communities and individuals from a fundraising perspective or a charity aspect of it. And then when the American Family Insurance Championship came to town, we started looking at the possibilities of birdies to end ALZ and use it during the tournament. We talked to American Family about it for about a 2 or 3 year period, and they had other priorities. But last year, they gave us permission for the Talking Golf Show to work with the UW Foundation and the ADRC to have a campaign strictly for Alzheimer's research. And through the show, we promoted the efforts, and it was based on the amount of birdies that were in the tournament, the total number of birdies by all the players in the American Family Insurance Championship last year. And they gave us permission. We promoted the event, and we asked people to donate whatever they could based on the amount of birdies in the tournament. And we raised just under $60,000 in that initial effort to do that. So after last year's success, then the Stricker Foundation, along with UW Hospital, American Family Insurance, they all got together, and now there's a whole new way that this is going to be done. It's going to help out a lot of different organizations at the hospital.
That's wonderful. And I want to plug this event for our listeners. Now, our audience spans well beyond Madison and Wisconsin, but for those who want to learn more or make a donation to the cause, you can visit birdiesforhealth.org. Birdies for Health is raising money in 5 different health areas: pediatrics, vision and eye health, cancer research, organ transplant, and Alzheimer's disease. You can make a flat donation to the cause of your choice, or you can donate a set amount, such as a quarter or a dime, for every birdie recorded throughout the 3-day golf tournament. Now remember, of course, that these are excellent golfers, so be careful about those donations.
Well, you can make a general donation, too. It doesn't have to be based on specifically on the birdies. The fun part of it, though, is if you do it based on the birdies, you can watch the events as it happens throughout the tournament. And I'll be right up front about it. Last year, there was 899 birdies in the tournament. So we had donations of a dime per birdie. We had donations of $5 per birdie. We had people that just made a general donation to Alzheimer's research. And the beauty of what we did last year is 100% of the proceeds went to Alzheimer's research here at the UW Hospital. And to me, that's critical because research is the cure, right? They got to find the cure. And that needs to be done through research and those types of things. So it's an opportunity to not only contribute financially, but and now you have other areas where you can donate to if you want. You mentioned the five different areas. There'll be a specific website during the tournament that'll be devoted exclusively to these five categories. So you'll be able to go there and pick the category that you want to donate to and make a contribution. Everybody will be very thankful that you did, and it will help out a lot of different areas.
Paul, you've clearly found your voice. You found your passion, your direction within the Alzheimer's movement. What advice would you give to caregivers or family members or friends of someone affected who's looking for their place in the Alzheimer's movement?
Number one, if you're a caregiver, which is a very difficult thing to do, people, and I don't mean this in a negative way, until you're involved in it, you really don't understand how difficult it really is. And if you're a caregiver, don't try to do it all by yourself. You need the help of other family members and friends. If you're someone that's a friend of a person who is a caregiver, help them out. Take them to lunch. Make a phone call to them. Give them a chance to get away for a couple of hours and those kind of things. And in terms of, you need to learn about the disease so you have an understanding of how you may be able to help. You can learn the different stages of the disease. Look for the 10 warning signs. Get to understand them a little bit. Then there are other ways you can help out too, one of which we've talked about. Support the Alzheimer's and Dementia Research Center here at the hospital. Maybe think about getting involved in a clinical study. You could talk to how important that is in terms of people being involved in the clinical studies and that type of thing. Volunteer to help out other organizations because there's a lot of different groups that are involved in this. And maybe you've got some free time. Maybe you could participate in one of the walks that takes place and those kind of things. But if you are a family member and other family members are taking the major responsibility of the caregiving, you might need to rethink that. They need your help. They need your support. There's a lot of other things involved in this. You are a planner, a decision maker. There are life situations where there's decisions that have to be made. Be part of those decisions. Don't sit back and second guess them. And one that, go visit the person that's in a memory care facility. I've had people tell me I want to remember them the way they were. And my response to that one is, wait a minute, it's not about you, it's about them. What did they do for you during your lifetime? Have they always been there for you? Have they always helped out? Where are you now in their time of need? And it shouldn't be about you, it should be about them. And just think about those kind of things. But I know all people can't be caregivers. Some people are not capable of doing that. Maybe they live a long ways away. Or maybe they're just not, it's not in their operation or their MO to be able to do that. That's okay, but at least make some effort to be involved.
Those are great. That's great wisdom, Paul. Thank you. And really, in closing, for those who wish to donate, for those who wish to contribute to the Alzheimer's disease awareness, they can go to birdiesforhealth.org.
Right.
And again, you don't have to donate per birdie, but if you want to give a general donation.
Right. And we had people that just made flat donations of $25, $50. One donation that was considerable. And the person that made the donation isn't even a golfer. Didn't like the sport of golf. But his wife was involved in it. In fact, he had two situations where he was involved in it. And he made a contribution to it. So you can do it that way, too. And this year, with all of the publicity surrounding the tournament, again, you'll be able to go specifically to that website and donate there. And the Stricker Foundation, by the way, to get it kicked off, they put $20,000 in each of the five divisions even before the tournament started. So it's a wonderful thing for a lot of different areas. And you know what? The other aspect of this that's very positive is the educational process that's going to begin in terms of people realizing how serious the problem with Alzheimer's really is. That is very important for people to understand. I think this will help with that also. In despite the fact that even if they donate money, if they become educated, that's a good thing.
Well, thank you so much for being on the show, Paul.
My pleasure.
Dementia Matters is brought to you by the Wisconsin Alzheimer's Disease Research Center. The Wisconsin Alzheimer's Disease Research Center combines academic, clinical, and research expertise from the University of Wisconsin School of Medicine and Public Health and the Geriatric Research Education and Clinical Center of the William S. Middleton Memorial Veterans Hospital in Madison, Wisconsin. It receives funding from private, university, state, and national sources, including a grant from the National Institutes of Health for Alzheimer's Disease Centers. This episode was produced by Rebecca Wazileski and edited by Abishir Adin. Our musical jingle is Cases to Rest by Blue Dot Sessions. Check out our website at adrc.wisc.edu. You can also follow us on Twitter and Facebook. If you have any questions or comments, email us at dementiamatters@medicine.wisc.edu. Thanks for listening.